אוקיי, רבותיי, פריידי, היום יום השישי בשבת קודש. Thank you, David, for the birthday cake. It's very thoughtful. As we commemorate the... Amen, amen, וכן נאמר. We commemorate the 10th anniversary of our 40th birthday. The Mishnah says when you get to the age of 50, already you are eligible to give advice. Ben hamishim le'etza. So therefore, whoever wants advice going forward, I am officially of age to dispense advice. All these years that I've been giving advice was under the table. It was not sanctioned. But now whoever asks for advice, they should know that we don't have to close the lights and lock the door anymore. We can give it in the open because we got our the legal age of dispensing advice. Yeah, well now we could charge, yeah. That's right. No, not with the doctor. No, the doctor. The doctor. There is no competition to the doctor. All right. That being said, we are studying the book of Judges. The book of Shofetim. We're in Perek Aleph. So the story that we get to today is an episode here that begins in Pasuk Het. Vayilachamu b'nei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim. וילכדו אותה ויקוע לפי חרב ואת העיר שלחו באש. So they conquered Yerushalayim. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Very nice. Wow, what else? Fresh cake there, David. Beautiful. Hazako Baruch. So, they conquered Yerushalayim. V'har yadu b'nei Yehuda l'ilachim b'Kanani yoshev har v'negev ha-shefela. So b'nei Yehuda started to go fight with the different Kanani inhabitants of that area. V'yelech Yehuda el ha-Kanani yoshev b'Hebron. Then he went to Hebron. V'shem Hebron lefanim Kiryat Arba. The name of Hebron originally was called Kiryat Arba. V'yaku et Sheshai v'tahiman v'talmai. So you had the giants over there. So they killed the giants. וילך משם אל יושבי דביר. So then they went to the city of דביר. ושם דביר לפנים קריית ספר. The name of דביר originally was called קריית ספר. ויומר כלב אשר יכה את קריית ספר ולחדה ונתתי לו את אחסה ביתי לאישה. אמן. So what happened was, Kalev made a proposition. And Kalev ben Yefuneh says that the one that's able to conquer the city of Kiryat Sefer, he will give his daughter Achsa to that conqueror as a wife. Vayilkeda Otniel ben Kenaz, achi Kalev akaton memenu, vayiten lo et Achsa bito leisha. So it's an amazing story. The Torah is telling us that there was a city called Devir. It was originally called Kiryat Sefer. It seems it was in the hands of the enemy. Kalev was in his territory. So he wanted to conquer it. So he said, whoever can conquer the city, he gave him an incentive. You conquer the city, you get my daughter. Sure enough, Otniel ben Kenaz, the great conqueror, comes along. He conquers the city. And there you have it. He ends up becoming the son-in-law of Kalev. Question is over here, is that since when is conquering a city become a qualification to become a son-in-law? I mean, how is Kalev putting himself at risk? The Gemara says in Ta'anit, for example, that There were three people that asked Shelo Kehogen. They asked incorrectly. Shaul is the one that said, you know, the one that kills Goliath, I'll give him my daughter. Now he put himself at risk. God forbid, let's say a mamzer would have went and done it, or somebody that does not have the proper the lineage. He got lucky, it was David. So the Tosfot asks over there in Ta'anit, how come the Gemara doesn't say Kalev asked Shelo Kehogen? He also put himself at risk. I mean, he got lucky. Otniel ben Kenaz happened to be at Tzaddik, so he got lucky, but he rolled dice. Let's say you had some ruffian that came along and conquered the city of Kiryat Sefer. Then you got to give Achsa to the ruffian. And then Kalev bet wrong. So why doesn't the Gemara say that Kalev is part of the group that asked Shelo Kehogen? So the Gemara in Temura on Daf Tet Zayin. Gemara says that something incredible happened at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu's death. There was 300 halachot that were forgotten. During the time of the grief and the anguish and all that, halachot were forgotten. And Kalev got up and said that whoever will be able to retrieve and recover the 300 forgotten halachot, he will be worthy to marry my daughter. So the conquest over here was a spiritual conquest. The Torah is calling it Kiryat Sefer. Whoever will be able to conquer the Sefer, the halachot. So Otniel ben Kenaz is able to come back in his, you know, in his wisdom, and somehow he's able to retrieve it. And therefore, it's not that he was asking Shelo Kehogen, because he knows that somebody that can retrieve 300 halachot, it's got to be a tzaddik. I'm going to get some lowlife. The only problem is, so then, what in this world does it have to do with him conquering the physical city of Kiryat Sefer? Which, that's very nice, Derashah and the Gemara, but en mikra yotze mide peshuto. I mean, the simple pshat in the pasuk is there was a city. It was called Devir, and it's called Kiryat Sefer in the Rishona. So you want to tell me, oh no, really, Kiryat Sefer is the halachot, and that was a tzaddik. But the pasuk is talking about a location. So there's a sefer called Arbe Nahal. And Arbe Nahal says an incredible chidush. He says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the blueprint of the creation is the Torah itself. That means when God opens up the blueprint, you don't see, you know, a box that says 8x10 feet and a pipe and, you know, a mechanical room, a coffee room like you just showed me and all that. You don't see that. You see the Torah. You see words. So therefore, the Arbe Nahal says that every location in the world, in its origin, is made up of a chilek of Torah, which is an amazing thing. He says that's why, for example, you know, Talmud Bavli had to be in Bavel. That's where it was. That's why sometimes if you can't understand something in one place, the Gemara says, Mishnah says, Perkei Avot, Heve Gole Lemakom Torah. What does it mean, Heve Gole Lemakom Torah? It simply means if there's a yeshiva in a different city, Heve Gole Lemakom Torah. But no, Heve Gole Lemakom Torah, to the Makom where the Torah you're looking for is. Because maybe you don't understand it over here. So you need to go to the place where that Torah is, and you have a Bosiyata Nishmayata recover. So the Makom is Torah. The place itself has the Torah in its origins. So therefore, these 300 halachot, where were they situated? They were in Kiryat Sefer. So therefore, once he was able to recover the 300 halakhot, so then it would become easy for him to actually conquer the physical city. So there was both things that were taking place over here. There was the conquest of the halakhot, but if you look on the map, on the blueprint, these 300 halakhot were connected to which location on the globe? Dvir, Kiryat Sefer. So as long as those 300 halakhot were forgotten, you couldn't get the city. You couldn't get the roots of that city. The Torah of that city was forgotten. So when Otniel ben Kenaz comes along and is mehadeshit, so then already he's able to bring it back to its place. Now he's connected to the Torah of the city. Then when they went in to conquer it, so there was a real conquering here. But the real conquest was the spiritual conquest, which led to the physical conquest. So Otniel is Pirak Es Gadol Ador, by the way. So he becomes the son-in-law of Caleb ben Yefuneh. Of course, the daughter of Caleb, they talk about her also in the Gemara Ta'anit. She's called Achsa. Achsa is Melashon Kaas. Because anybody that saw her got angry at his wife. She was so pretty. So a guy would see Achsa and come up to his wife and say, "Mehori afa gadol azeh. You know, what is this over here? She has a face of Echa, and this Achsa over here is beautiful." So he would get angry. She would cause the people to get angry at their wives. Anyway, so they get married. What does she do? Caleb, daughter to Otniel ben Kenaz, gadol ador. So the pasuk says over here, so they came into the marriage. She asked from her father for a piece of real estate, but it's not me'ala hamor, and she fell off the donkey. ויום ותומר לו, הבא לי ברכה. אני לברכה. כי ארץ הנגב נתנני. You gave me a dry piece of land. ונתת לי גולות מים. Give me some water. ויתן לכלב את גולות עילית ואת גולות תחתית. So she ends up getting something in the inheritance. Upper גולות and lower גולות. What happened over here? So that she brings down an amazing conversation that took place between Achsa and her father. She falls in front of her father and she says, "You gave me a dry land." Adam shebeto menugav mikol tov she'en bo ela Torah. She came along and said, "Who'd you marry me off to?" She was very happy. She got a ben Torah, but where's the money. Where's the gelt? Where's the money? Imen kemah in Torah, which means she now accepted upon herself the responsibility to support the family. She didn't want to bother Otniel ben Kenaz. You learn. She didn't think for a minute that Otniel ben Kenaz has to go out now and sell widgets in order to support, but she has to do it. So therefore, who does she go to? She has a rich father. So she goes to Caleb and she says, "You gave me a dry land," meaning you gave me a husband that's only Torah, and that's what she's saying. Now she's saying it in a negative way. He's only Torah, and therefore I cannot mevatel him. I cannot, send him out to go work because he's Kodesh Kodeshim, this guy over here. I cannot take him away from the yeshiva. So the pasuk comes along and says, "Vayom ela Kalev malach, avali beracha." Oh, look at that. Another cake, Rabotai. Unbelievable.
See, Rabbi, some of us don't forget.
Some of us don't forget.
I told you I got to be back in a few minutes.
Unbelievable. Look at that. That's,
happy birthday, buddy. Look at that. Salim, only good things.
Amen.
Look
amen.
At that. We'll go get that's a cake. Not to take away from David's cake, Rabotai.
You got cake.
But that's incredible. Happy birthday, Rabbi. Fantastic.
I hope you like that.
I like everything. I'm sure you got it because you like it, but I like it also. That's usually how it works.
chocolate fudge, I don't know.
Okay, either one's good, by the way. Beautiful, look at this cake here. Unbelievable. Okay, so.
Yeah, right here.
Oh, yeah,
over there.
Sam.
This place is over there. Jaime, you're busy today. Got the knife again. Okay. Cut it again.
Maybe take this one home.
It's Pav, it's not Pav, it's Shabbat.
David,
the David? No, for the Kahan. It's all the Kahan. Doctor, you got a second piece today. From Alim Bakodesh.
Hey, Rabbi, take this home. That chocolate.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, good. It's very generous of you. Can I take home one of the finger?
No,
finger?
The rest of it.
No. You know what? Maybe lick the thing. I'll just take home the chocolate. Anyway.
This is a very important time.
Yeah, this is.
When you let go vote, if the woman is responsible.
If you're married to Otniel Ben Kenaz, that's right. Oh, look at that. That had a beautiful cake to cut here. Okay, Rabotai. Want to hire me for birthdays? I became an official cake cutter. So there you go. So anyway, Kalev gives his daughter Parnasa, and as a result of that, she is able to support the husband. If you look at the Malbim on this. Malbim gives us the story. I'd like to read it together, Rabotai. The Malbim says, "V'darshu b'timura sh'shloshet alafim alachot." Well, I said 300. The Gemara sounds like it was 3,000. "Nishtakehu b'me evlos shel Moshe." Otniel ben Kenaz echziram bepilpulo. Otniel ben Kenaz was able to retrieve it with his pilpul. V'shema shekatav eres ha-negev, Netanan, he gave me a dry, arid land. Rotze lomar adam menugav mikol tov. He doesn't have any physical. She'en bo ela Torah. Amazing, he's just filled with Torah.
This is
the Malbim I'm quoting. ועל שם שמשה קיבל תורה מסיני, ושעתניאל היה ראש ישיבה, והוא היכה את קריאת ספר. What does it mean, היכה קריאת ספר? He pounded at the book. היכה קריאת ספר. He pounded the book. שהכאה תאמר בדברי חכמים על ניצוח בפלפול. That he was able to win the debate of the arguments to bring these הלכות back. Which means the rabbis call that מלחמתה של תורה. The war of Torah. So he was fighting Milchamta Shel Torah. And he beat it. He was able to bring the halachot. Ve'otniel hu natzach. Im melchemet ha-kenani b'kiryat sefer kifshuto. Which means the Malbim's asking that this story is written twice in Tanakh. It's written in the book of Yehoshua. That's why it sounds so familiar. And it's written again in the book of Shofetim. So the Malbim will say that the first time it told the story was the physical city. And the second time it's telling the story is to tell us the spiritual angles that came out of it. He says, Zen is kad b'sifri Yoshua. Im ha-nitzua ha-sheni ha-toriyi, the Torah victory, v'zen is karpo. Well, she saw she got a dry land from two angles. Number one, it was a dry land of the geography. There was no water in the land from a physical standpoint. That was her claim in the book of Yehoshua. Hey, where's irrigation? How are we gonna have water? And bet shebaala panal eres hanegev, which means her husband turned to the south. The Gemara says, "Harotze lahkim yadrim." If a person wants to get wisdom, where does he face? To the south. He says, "You gave me Eretz HaNegev. You gave me a guy from the south. not the, below the Mason-Dixon line. You gave me a guy from the south that faces south all day long. His Rotzeh Lahkim. All he wants is wisdom. V'chol yishov v'chol hefetz. That's all his desire is. Ki lo yatzmiyach mechya lebeto. He's not going to have any parnasah. V'alzeh amar, netanani tachat natatali. She'ani na'aseti eres ha-negev al yedeh ba'ali. Which means she's saying that he made me dry. She's saying, Netanani, he made me dry by learning all day Baruch Hashem, but I have to support my family. So it says he gives her two things. Galut elit vegalut tahtit. The upper galut and the lower gulot. Lehashkot et arza neguva. That's first the water, so she'll have water to physical water. Bet ramaz la gam ken ki kevar yesh la isha moshech maim chayim mekor haberaka alyona v'tachtona meyokhmaid v'anoshit. Kemo shamru hachamenu zuchanu v'raka b'medrash, mi shirazeh elyonim v'tachtonim niglu lo, yibakesh v'meni davar? Saying, what are you talking about? You have a man over here who's a tzaddik, hasid, mekubal. He's able to draw down the beracha with his learning. You don't need anything from me. ועל פי זה, סיפר לפי המשב המליצה שבא דבר פה, שכאשר נתיישב ונביץ תורה הרבה, לפי דוש הקמים, ובני כנה אלי עלו אליו ולא יודע קרובה שמה, והוא ישב אדם מישיבה של חוכמה. So, basically, she got the blessings from her father, and she said, basically, her father said, you have nothing to worry about. We're talking about people. The point is, these people over here ended up getting the physical beracha and end up getting the spiritual beracha as well. Now the Navi goes on to tell us another story. The Navi says, Ubne keni choten Moshe alu meir atemarim et bnei Yehuda mitbar Yehuda asher beneged Arav. Vayelech vayeshev et ha'am. Now we talk about Bnei Keni. Who's Bnei Keni? Anybody know what Keni is? Kenny. First Kenny in history. Kenny is Yitro. Yitro had seven names. One of the seven names of Yitro was Keni. These are the children of Yitro that lived in that that region. Rashi comes along and says that originally they were living in the city of Palms, Palm Beach. Ira Temarim. That's Palm Springs, Palm Beach. But the real original city of Palms was Yericho, Jericho. So they lived in Jericho. שניתן להם דושנה של יריחו לאוכלה עד שיבנה בית המקדש. That was their land. Bnei Keni got to settle in that spot. They gave it to them on lease until the בית המקדש was built. ומי שיבנה בית הבחירה, whoever would build the בית המקדש, would get as a bonus the city of יריחו. So until the בית המקדש, that land was available. So they settled on it. There were no Indians then. So they settled the family of Keni, which is Yitro, that lived on that piece. V'natnu al bnei Yitro, 440 shana. Unbelievable. So they lived on that land. It was a 440-year lease from when the times they got into Eretz Yisrael until they built the Beit HaMikdash. I think Hong Kong was a 100-year lease. This was 444 years, or 40 years they're living in a place. V'atalmidim shebahem hinihuha. Now the Navi tells us that at a certain point, the people of Keni Bnei Yitro halchu, they left Etzel Otniel ben Kenaz. They went to study Torah by this Sadiq that we just mentioned, Otniel ben Kenaz. They called him Ya'abetz as well. So now Rabbi Elkanaz is sitting with all these students that came to join him. Devarei Yamim, it says Otniel ben Kenaz actually prayed for this situation, that God should, you know, give him Talmidim. Sure enough, the Talmidim from Bnei Yitro, they made their way to that area. So now Otniel ben Kenaz comes a great Rosh Yeshiva. He has all these students from Bnei Yitro. Rashi says on the Pasuk, Vayelech Vayeshev et ha'am, אם התלמידים יושבים לפניו, הוא ביקש מאת הקדוש ברוך הוא שיזמינו תלמידים הגונים. He prayed to God that he should get good students, as the pasuk says in דברי הימים, וזימן לו החסידים הללו. Wow, so he got these חסידים, so these בני קני over here, or the students that left wherever they were living, they were good, they didn't have to leave technically, they were living, you know, in Eid Tamarim, the Beit HaMikdash wasn't going to be built for 440 years. There was no rush for them to leave. But when they heard Otniel ben Kenaz opened up a yeshiva, so his yeshiva was primarily from Bnei Keni, from the children of Yitro, that they came to learn Torah with him. Why were they so interested, and they felt a sense of urgency to right away come and check themselves into the yeshiva?
Why is everybody running to Lakewood?
Right, why is everybody running to Lakewood? That's a good question also. I think this will answer that. So the Mefarshim say that there's two ways that a person is able to elevate himself. One way is through his hard work. The other way is by knocking down the other guy. By knocking down the other guy, automatically, so you're on top. People that are plagued with jealousy cannot see somebody else, you know, succeed or higher than them. That's the inyan of the kin'ah that the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, Shemotzi et ha'adam min ha'olam. The jealousy is a sickness that a person acquires, and he causes him to act in an irrational way. He cannot see somebody else have any success. So therefore, he desires, the kin'ah leads to murder. So therefore, you get rid of him. Once you get rid of him, so then you're on top again. And that's, of course, the wrong way to accomplish this. The real way is to succeed yourself and become great. Of course, the first example of that would be Cain. Cain was plagued with jealousy. He was jealous of his brother because his korban was accepted and his korban was not. Tell him you call him back, Alex. So you see over here that his korban was accepted, so he got jealous, especially his older brother. Now, Borei Olam said to Cain, don't take it to heart. You could also be good. Make the shuvah, do the right thing. God will accept you. But he couldn't control himself. And that jealousy led to the first homicide in history. Cain, of course, kills Hevel. And the Mikubalim, of course, tell us that Cain would have to take a journey through the world of Gilgul Neshamot in order to, you know, to fix himself. Eventually, Cain's Neshama would find itself in the Egyptian, in Egypt, the Mitzri. You remember that was the Mitzri that Moshe Rabbeinu saw beating up a Jew. And Moshe Rabbeinu saw him, and the Pasuk says that he killed him. Now, of course, Rashi tells us that he killed him using a Shema Meforash, a name. The Mekubalim say, you know, it's a zechut to die with it, using a name of God. Right. Moshe Rabbeinu could have killed him with his bare hands. You know, take the rope, go from behind and strangle him. What does he have to use? A Shem Kadosh. So they say, the Mekubalim say, you'll only use Shem Kadosh if you're interested in making a tikkun of some sort. So since the Mitzri had the tikkun of Kayin, and Moshe was the tikkun of Hevel. So therefore, when you see Moshe in the Mitzri, Arizal says it's actually deja vu all over again. You see Hevel and the Egyptian. So therefore, at that point, it's what goes around comes around. What did Kayin do to Hevel in a previous life? He put him in the ground. And what does the Moshe do to the Egyptian? He puts him in the ground. He was able to settle the score and make some sort of tikkun. But the tikkun of the Mitzri is only part of the tikkun of Kayin. At that point over there, it says the neshama of Kayin would move to Midian. Would move to Midian and would end up in the body of a fellow called Yitro. That's why they nicknamed Yitro Keni. Keni is Otiyot Kayin. In order to tell us that, so therefore Moshe has to follow follow his brother. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do right after he kills the Mitzri? Goes to Midian. He's following the Gilgul. And now he would make again a tikkun with Yitro by marrying his daughter, whatever that is. And Yitro eventually would be fixed. So Yitro's journey or Kayin's journey is Yitro, Kayin, Moshe, and the Mitzri. I'm giving it in that specific order. Yitro, Kayin, and Mitzri. I know it's out of order, but there's an easy way to remember. That's what I'm telling you, in that order. When Kayin committed the sin, God told him, you will be fixed. When will you be fixed? Ki shiv'atayim yukam Kayin. Moshe Rabbeinu had seven names. He said, the man that has shiv'atayim, the man that has seven names, yukam Kayin will fix Kayin. Yukam is Rashi Tevot, Yitro, Kayin, Mitzri. That Moshe Rabbeinu, who shiv'atayim, yukam Kayin will be able to make the tikkun. And that's what he did. Yitro also has seven names, but he's not going to fix himself. He's going to be fixed by Moshe. Well, look at that. So you see, they had something in common, Moshe and his father. They both had seven names. In any event, you see over here that Kayin's weakness was Kana'ah. He had a weakness of character to jealousy. The jealousy caused him to kill his brother. The Mitzri in Egypt also, he killed also. Well, he committed adultery. He was jealous also. Wanted something that doesn't belong to him. So that midah was in Kayin. That midah was in Kayin. The Ben Ish Chai writes, Talmidei Chachamim Marvim Shalom Ba'olam. Talmidei Chachamim are promoters of peace. Why? It says when a person is involved in the study of Torah, it lifts him above the mundane pleasures of this world, and he's not interested in the physical pursuits and the things that are beneath the sun. He's involved in something that is above the sun. When a person is involved in a higher order, the petty things that bother people all day long don't bother the real Tamir Al-Kab. If you're learning, these things don't bother you. If you're not learning, then already, you know, you start looking around and you start to have jealousy and envy and it starts to bother you. But if a person is learning, so it lifts a person above the nonsense. And therefore you say, who cares? And of course it gives the person the right perspective, how to look at things. And everything is with a shamayim. Nobody can touch anything if it doesn't belong to you. So one of the main remedies against Kana'ah, at least, is a study of Torah. As a matter of fact, Gemara said, "Kenat sofrim tarbi chokma." That well, jealousy is toxic, but in Torah, to be jealous of somebody's level in Torah, that's okay. That type of jealousy is okay. But outside of that, it's a terrible midah. So it's quite possible to say that Bnei Keni were living in borrowed land. And they knew that one day, the one that builds the Beit HaMikdash is going to come along and take the land. They didn't own anything. They were living as tenants.
They knew it.
They knew it, of course. The land was given to them not on
as a,
well, if you know it, why shouldn't they know it? They're the ones that are living on the land. So they were told, we're giving you the land on consignment. And it's a lease. It's a long lease. It's a long lease, but one day somebody's going to take the land. Now, if you come from Kayin, automatically those feelings of jealousy that are in his genes start to, I don't have a land. We're living on borrowed property. All my friends have houses. I have to rent. That's not fair. I can be evicted at any time. Everybody else is setting a land. They're building homes. They're building backyards. They're doing. And over here, they put us on a land. Okay, well, it's very nice, but we don't own it. We don't have anything that we could inherit our children. So Bnei Keni over here are being faced with a great nisayon of, they're have-nots. And they're confronted with all the haves that are around them. At this moment, Eretz Yisrael is being divided, mind you. So, everybody's building new homes at this point. The whole country now is being built from scratch. Everybody's planting new gardens. And the only people in the land that are, tenants is the Bnei Keni. And that's creating in Bnei Keni a great arousement of the jealousy. So what do? They said right away, since we have a proneness to this weakness, we have to stop this. So where did they go? They moved to a different town, the next town over, where Otniel ben Kenaz was. And all of a sudden you see a whole parade of Bnei Keni coming to the yeshiva. And what are you doing over here? This is for us not a yeshiva, this is a rehab. We need to check ourselves into the Limud HaTorah in order to overcome. Already we start to feel that this might take us over. And since we know that we're susceptible to this because of our history, so therefore they teach us a lesson. That the best way to overcome one weakness is like the Gemara says, "Im paga becha menuval zeh, moshcheu lebet ha-midrash." If the menuval is going to come, which is the Yetzer Hara, to come and catch you, by the way, take him to Bet HaMidrash. And the Gemara says, if he's a rock, he'll explode. If he's a piece of metal, he'll melt. The Yetzer Hara dissipates through the study of Torah. And that's what the Mefarshim say, Ubnei Keni Choten Moshe Alu Me'ir HaTemarim Et Bnei Yehuda Medbar Yehuda Asher Benegev Arad Vayelech Vayeshev Et Ha'am. They went and they sat with the Am, and Rashi says that he got his answer, Vezimen Lo HaHasidim Alalu, that Otniel Kenaz also gets the benefit that God presented them these beautiful students that Rashi refers to as Hasidim. Why are they called Hasidim? Because a tzaddik does what he's obligated. The Hasid already lives on a higher level. They had no reason to move, but they already had a certain suspicion that they were worried that maybe the jealousy of living in such a town that doesn't belong to them. So what did they end up doing? Because of a smidgen of a concern, the Hasid always makes a fence. The tzaddik, he goes up to the fence. The Hasid, he doesn't want to get close to the Avirah, like the doctor just said over there. He has to remove himself from it. So therefore, Where do you go to a place? You go to the yeshiva. In the yeshiva, no one's talking about money, hopefully. No one's talking about the physical item. Who has you? You're going to a man, or Ki'er Ben Kenaz, that's the son-in-law of a wealthy man, but his wife says the guy's dry, has nothing. That's the best way to overcome your jealousy, that he puts himself in a group of tzaddikim that what concerns them more is the upper worlds as opposed to the lower worlds. The yeshiva, again, if they're able to insulate themselves, you're living in this world, but you're not in this world. That's why it says the Ben Yishai, Tamidei Achem Mabim Shalom Ba'olam. The shalom that we're talking about over here is they don't have a jaundiced eye against people. Because they're not looking at those type of things.
In other words, you're Ayin
Hara? No, they're not jealous. They're not envious of other people. It doesn't bother them what somebody else has. Nor do they wish anybody bad for that matter, because there's they're living on a higher plane. I'll explain it to you this way, because I see you're not getting it. There's a person is able to overcome one desire when he's involved with a different desire. An example, everybody has a desire to eat, but you also have a desire to make money. For some reason, when you're making money, you skip lunch. Your desire to eat goes away. Not that you don't have a desire, you're involved in a higher desire. Guy says, your wife calls up, hey, did you eat lunch? Don't interrupt me now. The guy's at the register. He wants to give you money. I'll eat later. Then you come over and say, that's right, I didn't eat for 12 hours. Not because you're a tzaddik, because you were making money for 12 hours. So therefore you just, one desire overrid the other one, overrides the other one. And that's the same thing in spiritual desire. The famous story of the rabbi that was walking down the street, and he passes some, you know, lewd, a bar or whatever it is, with all sorts of things, pictures and stuff, and it's very attractive, very magnetic. There's a guy walking right behind him, and the guy walking behind him can't take his eyes off whatever he's looking at. And he notices the rabbi walks right by it. Doesn't even lift his head. Doesn't even... So he says, I gotta follow this guy. I gotta follow this guy. I can't believe such a guy like this. He follows him, makes left turn, right turn, left turn. Huh? So he walks to a building. He sees him sitting down. He opens up a book. And he starts with the thumbs. So the guy sits down next to him. And he waits till the guy lifts his head up. He says, do me a favor, can I ask you a question? He says, what are you doing? What is in this book here? He says, what do you care what's in the book here? He says, listen, you gotta tell me what's in the book. He said, why do you care? He said, listen, I watched you walk by that place and you didn't even look. That tells me that you must be going to a place that has a bigger desire than that. Which means the only reason why you cannot look at this lust is because there must be something even more pleasurable so that you don't waste your time. What is in this book that's more pleasurable than that? He said, I thought that's what it is. So you understand when a person's about in a higher pleasure, so you don't look. Like, oh, you heard the other guy won $1 million. Good luck to him. I'm learning. It bothers you more what the Tosafot says. It bothers the scholar more what's the answer. How do you learn it? How do you reconcile it? Somebody calls, oh, you heard so-and-so just built a swimming pool. What does that do? I'm trying to reconcile Abayin Rava and the big questions over here. Their mind is in a different place. You think if you would go to Hakam Avadiyah Yosef in the middle of writing a teshuvah and you tell him, you heard the guy built a tennis court. What's the tennis court? Okay. What does the guy do with answering the Rashba? What does the guy do with what I'm involved? They exchange one pleasure for a higher pleasure. David HaMelech said it, that the Torah to him is mitukim devash venofet sufim. To David HaMelech, the Torah was as sweet as honey. So when he was learning Torah, he was eating candy bars. So he felt that mitikut, and therefore was able to override a lot of the others. So that's possibly what happened over here with B'nai Keni.
From birth, always wanted to know how did that come. finally got the nerve to ask him. He says, one day I was walking in Haifa.
Say it. Okay, we're all 18. Everybody's 18 over here.
He didn't know where he was walking, and he's walking, and he sees this in this place, and he turns around and he runs away.
Sound familiar?
See, he says, why did he run away? He ran after him. Where are you going? I'm going to do a base marriage. Base marriage is better than a makam. That's how he became a Baal Teshuva.
Okay, I'm going to say there's an echo in the room because I just heard that story. But I like the way you told. You told it better than me, doctor. You told it better than me. So I'm going to give you a pass on that. I always like to hear stories twice. It's in 2 minutes.
A little different.
It's the same story, but it's not a problem. Now, Rabotai, let's continue for a second. You see over here, an amazing yesod. The Jewish people come out of Egypt. Vayishma Yitro. Yitro hears about the events of Kiryat Yamsuf. And right away, what does Yitro do? He converts. He right away joins Klal Yisrael. He has a moment of inspiration, as we call it. He's inspired. Everybody's inspired today. Very inspiring.
Was his daughter married yet?
What are you saying?
At that point, was his daughter married to Moshe?
Yeah, sure. He was married to Moshe in Parashat Shemot. This is already Parashat Yitro. Now, somebody else also heard about the events of Yitziat Mitzrayim, and they had a different reaction. That, of course, is Amalek. What is Amalek's reaction? They got jealous. The motivation of Amalek is jealousy. Look at these Jews. Miracles are happening to them, splitting of the sea, knocking down an empire. So here's the rule again. There's two ways to become higher than your friend. Either work for it, or kill your friend. So Amalek came along in Cain's method. And what does he come along and do? Kill Klal Yisrael. And once you kill Klal Yisrael, you've pacified your jealousy because there's nobody on top of you. You're on top. And Amalek wants to be on top. Reshit Goyim Amalek. Yitro, who has that weakness, because Cain has that weakness. So if you look at Rashi, when it says Vayishma Yitro, Rashi says Ma Shemua Shama Uba. What did he hear, Yitro? So it says he heard two things. He heard Kiryat Yamsuf Umilhemet Amalek. What does it mean that he heard these two things? What does Milhemet Amalek and Kiryat Yamsuf have to do with anything? Explanation is that when he heard Kiryat Yamsuf, he understood there's two ways to react. If God is being so favorable to the Jews, either I can elevate myself to be like them, or I could kill them. So when he saw Kiryat Yamsuf and he saw what Amalek did, he said, why? If Amalek is capable of doing that, that means I'm capable of doing that because I did it already. Because when my brother was better than me, I killed him in cold blood in the previous Gilgul. So Yitro was frightened when he saw again in front of him a live example of Amalek that could not control their envy of Klal Yisrael to the extent they went to murder them. That's what he heard. More than he heard, that's what he understood. Vayishma means he understood. And as a result of that, right away he comes and he joins Klal Yisrael. So you see that Tzaddik of Yitro's family, they were always in tune of that deficiency that they had. And every time they were challenged with a certain nisayon, whether it was in the times of Moshe, so they joined Klal Yisrael. They said, we have no choice. Otherwise, if it happened, we can do the same thing. We'll become enemies of the Jewish people just out of envy. And when it was in the times of the Navi, when they got this leased land, and everybody's building and everybody's doing,
and they started to sense a certain feeling of jealousy, which they knew they were, you know, they had that weakness inside of them, so they had to make another move over here. So it's interesting to note, Yitro is always making moves to control the kin'ah. This move over here, they said, the answer is to go to the yeshiva. And you have Otniel ben Kenaz, the perfect Rebbe for that. The Rebbe doesn't care about any Geshmi youth. His wife had to go to Afar and say, the guy doesn't have anything. All he does is learn Torah out there, Lord. The guy has no, he doesn't have any vestige of Geshmi youth, this guy. That's a good Rosh Yeshiva for the children of Yitro. Now see, that man's totally removed from the benefits of this world and is immersed in the Torah. And therefore, if it doesn't bother the Rosh Yeshiva, that's going to trickle down. It's not going to bother. They needed a Rosh Yeshiva like Otniel ben Kenaz. They couldn't have any Rosh Yeshiva. They needed a Rosh Yeshiva of Otniel ben Kenaz that is totally minugav, like the Pasuk says. He's totally dry from any physical items. And when they went over there, he got what he calls Tamidim Hagunim. So that's already a little of the depth of the history of Kayin and B'nai Keni and that whole story. Now we can say something on the parasha. That has to be connected. Well, we'll try to connect it to some. In my printer, I printed the paper so I could read it from the papers because I'm not sure we'll be able to find these books. Pirkei Avot talks about the qualifications to be a student of Avraham Avinu. If I'm not mistaken, in the Pirkei Avot it says you need to have three qualities to be a student of Moshe Rabbeinu, to Avraham Avinu. What are the qualities? Let's open up the Pirkei Avot. Let's see the qualities. I forget them from year to year. You remember them? Oh, actually, I think it's good that we're doing it because nobody remembers it. So, well, it says three. So there's a Mishnah Pirkei Avot. It's in Pirkei Mishnah Yud Tet. כל מי שיש בידו שלושה דברים הללו מתלמידיו של אברהם אבינו, שלושה דברים אחרים מתלמידיו של בלעם הרשע, עין טובה, רוח נמוכה, נפש שפלה. Okay, we don't need to discuss all of them today, רבותיי. We need to discuss over here the first one. Exactly. What does it mean that Avraham Avinu has Ayin Tova? What's the explanation of that? So, the Rishonim on this Mishnah normally explain Ayin Tova is like we just explained with Kayin. Kayin would be a classic example of Ayin Ra'ah, where he sees his brother has something more than he has, and therefore he has a jaundiced eye against. And Ayin Tova would mean, you're happy for the other guy. They tell the guy, oh, you heard, he won the lottery. And the guy can't even pay his bills. So most people say, well, the guy, why is he getting, I can't even pay my bills, this guy's a... And the Ayin Tova guy says, good luck to him. He's happy. Ayin Tova. Avraham Avinu was very happy to see the success of somebody else. Even if he has more. However, if you look at the Bar Tenura, Rabbeinu Avraham Bar Tenura, he says an incredible explanation on Ayin Tova. Ayin Tova, he says, Mr. Peck, במה שיש לו ואינו חומד ממון אחרים. He's happy, not only happy for the other guy, he himself is satisfied. He's מסתפק for what he has, He doesn't desire the money of others. Sheken matzinu be'Avraham. What's his proof from Avraham? When he tells the king of Sedom in last week's parasha, im mihud ve'ad tzorok na'al, I won't take a shoelace from you. You don't want to take the money of Melech Sedom. I'm not going in this today. I'm not too sure of what that proof is. I mean, the reason why he didn't want to take it is because he didn't want Melech Sedom to say, I'm the one that made you rich. So that's no proof. Could be he wanted the money, but there was, that money came with a catch to it. But nonetheless, that's the way the Bartenura learns. So there might be yet another way to explain the Ayin Tova of Avraham Avinu. And it's based on a Gemara in Ta'anit, page 21. Here, I have the papers in front of me, now I can read it. One way is like we always understood it. Ayin Tova, he's happy for the other guy, or he's not interested in somebody else's things. There was a fellow called Nahum Ish Gamzu. Very good. Yeah. You want to read the Gemara Ta'anit just so I can read it better? This doesn't come out so clear. The Gemara says that this fellow called Nahum Ish Gamzu, they set him on a mission once to go speak to the king. But I know we don't usually tell stories, but from stories of the Gemara, that's already tremendously mudim we can learn. So on Chaf Aleph, he tells the story. Here it is. V'amai karu le'Nahum Ish Gamzu. Why they call him Nahum Ish Gamzu? V'chol milta davas salkale amar Gamzu le'tova. Whatever happened with him, he said, Gamzo de Tova. You understand that? I have no problem that he always said, Gamzo de Tova. But they nicknamed him the wrong nickname then. What's the main words? The Gamzu or the Le Tova? I mean, Gamzu can be nothing. No, maybe it says maybe Nahum wanted everything to belong to him. So they used to call him Nahum Gamzu Yehili. This will also belong to me. I mean, if anything, they should have called him Nahum Hatova, Nahum. Anyway, stop. I'm just saying that the Gamzu is a. Oh, that's what they named him after the city. That's what the Rabbi Hananel says, I think. Yeah? Rabbi Hananel says, if I'm not mistaken, that they call him Nahum Ish Gamzu, Shem Makomhu. Unbelievable. It's the name of a place. You have the Devar Yamim over here, the Tanakh. He quotes a pasuk in Devar Yamim, Perek Bet Pasuk Kafet. Oh, so that's amazing. So he came from a city called Gamzu. I'm not so sure the city was called Gamzu, by the way. If I'm not mistaken, the city was called Gimzo. So therefore, we have to change his nickname then. Nahum Ish Gimzo. Let me just see the pasuk for a second. Open up Devar Yamim, Haimi. It's Perek Devar Yamim Bet Chafchet. Bet Chafchet. First, you got to find Devar Yamim. It's tricky. Okay, Bet Chafchet. Could you read me the pasuk, please? Kafchet. Dvarim in Bet, Perek Kaf Chet.
Sorry.
It doesn't tell me the Pasuk. Look for the name of that city. Gamzo, Gimzo. It's got to be about some tribe conquered a certain place. And they got this city and that city and that city and that city and Gamzo. If you want, I can find it probably not as fast as you, but I can find it. Way up to here. Okay. Okay, I trust you over there. Upilishtim Pashtu Ba'aleh Shefela, the Pilishtim conquered. It's Perek Chafchet Pasuk Yudchet. V'hanegev Lihuda v'yilkidu et Bet Shemesh v'et Ayalon v'et Gederot v'et Sucho v'bnoteah v'et Temna v'bnoteah v'et Gimzo. So there it is. Nahom ish Gimzo. And by the way, I have no problem with Rabbeinu Hananel, obviously. It makes sense that he's right. Because, for example, in Pirkei Avot, it says, Yoseh ben Yo'ezer ish sereda. When you say ish sereda, it means the man that came from sereda. Yoseh ben Yohanan ish Yerushalayim. So they called him Nahum ish Gimzo. And otherwise, what are you calling him ish? Just say Nahum Gimzu. Nahum Gamzu. What is it? Ish Gim. No, ish is the man from. Just like we have other examples, Yosef ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim, Yosef ben Sereda, Antignos Ish Socho. In Pirkei Avot, Antignos Ish Socho. What does it mean, Antignos Ish Socho? Antignos from Socho. So Rabbi Hanel, very fine. It's not, so it could be, I mean, that answers my question then, that really they used to call him Nahum Ish Gimzo. And then once already they saw that he has a certain trait, so therefore they changed the Gimzo to Gamzu. You understand? Otherwise, that's my question. They should have called him Toba. No, they weren't giving him a new name. He was always called Nahomish Gimzo from before Rabbi Hananel says. It's just that once they saw that he has this midav saying Gamzu the Toba, so people would say, Gimzu, Gamzu. We're nicknaming him the Gamzu, even though he's from Gimzu. So that's... They didn't give him a new name. They just changed the Nikudot on the original name that he had. And that's, by the way, could be that that's what the Gemara's question is. When the Gemara says over here, it says, V'amai karu le'nahum ish gamzu. The Gemara's question is, if he's from Gimzu, why did they call him Gamzu?
Gamzu has a meaning.
That's what I'm telling you. Gimzu has a meaning also. Listen, yeah, I can't explain it to a guy that's sleeping for 5 minutes, then wakes up for 5 minutes, and then I got to review the 5 minutes that when you're sleeping. Either you got to stay up the whole time or go to sleep the whole time. I prefer the latter. Now, the subject over here is that they were calling him Nahomish Gimzo. So the Gemara says, Amai Karu Nahomish Gamzu. If the name of a city was Gimzo, we understand it. Says, they were calling him Gamzu because of... the following story. Look at that. Just in the, we didn't even start the Gemara yet, and already is a Hiddushim. Techol milta da'aba salkale, amar gamzu letova. Whatever happened, he would say gamzu letova. Ze mechada ba'el leshiduri Yisrael doron lebekesar. The Jews needed to send a gift to the Caesar. Amru, they said, man Yizil, who are we going to send? Yizil Nahomish Gamzu, Amdumad bin Isim. He's a man of miracles. Shadru bayadeh male siftad abanim tovot umargaliyot. So they filled it with a treasure of jewelry. Azali went, bat ba'udira. He went to sleep in a certain inn. Vililya kamuhanak di yurae v'shaklinu nesifteh umalunu afra. Of course, they came along and they
stole it from him. It's a good hotel he stayed in. And they stole his equipment. And they filled it up with dirt. Now, our custom, Rabotai, is that we don't read parentheses. Now, there's a parenthetical here in the Gemara. Because the rule says you skip parentheses, I'm going to skip it, although it hurts me to skip it because it makes no sense if you skip it. So I'm going to read the parentheses first to show you how much sense it makes to give it out with it. The Mahad the next day, Ki Hazanu, he saw the dirt, Amar Gamzu Letova. He said, Gamzu Letova. Now they take this out. Now I understand why they took it out. Because according to this text, that means he woke up the next day, he saw the dirt, and he still went. Nah, that's... We always learned the story. When he got there, so therefore they take this out. Because if you're going to learn it with the parentheses, it's a different level story. Exactly. Means he woke up the next day, just double checked to see if everything's good. He saw it's not good. And he's never going anyway. That's already different madriga. But we don't have to deal with that for now because they already put it in a parenthetical. Then there's a hair over there, by the way. There is a hair. Where does the hair take me to? The hair takes me to Nimhak. Al Pi HaMaharsha. Okay, beauty. Okay, good. Ki matahatam, when he got there and he found out what happened, Shadinu l'sifta, he gave them the gift. Hazanu de malo afra, all of a sudden, they all saw him and the king, afar. Ba'amal kale miktalinu, so they wanted to kill him. The kulluhu, all the Jews. You're making jokes with me, you send me afar, I'm killing you and all the Jews. Amar kamahayku be'ihu da'eh, when the Jews are making litzanut from me. Amar gamzu letova. That's everything's good. It's all good. I can hear people, it's all good. Ata Eliyahu, Yahu Navi came. Edmeh lekehad minayu. He came as the image as one of the advisors. Amar demahay afram afrad Avraham abuhon. Maybe this is from the afar of Avraham. You remember this week's parasha? In this week's parasha, what does Avraham say? Banuchi afar va'efer. What does he mean when he says afar va'efer? God, you're unbelievable. And by now I should have been afar and efer. I should have been ashes when Nimrod threw me into the fire. And I'm still around today. And when I went last week's parashat to fight against the kings, Avram didn't have any weapons with him. All he had was afar. So I should have been, pummeled into the ground. Instead, what happened to Avraham? When he picked up the afar, that's all he had, he threw it, it turned into weapons. So the advisor tells the king, hey, listen, Jews are giving you afar. Don't throw it back so fast. Could be that's the magic dust of Avraham. When he used to throw it, it turned into spears. Anyway, it says we got to check it out. They were able to use it in a war that they had, and sure enough, as they're throwing the dirt, it turns into spears. So they say, okay, good. We're filling this up with abanim tova margaliot. So now Nahum comes back with margaliot, with treasure. Now, of course, he's such a tzaddik. Which hotel you think he's going to stay in? Would you stay in the same hotel? After they ripped you off, they stole everything you have. If the first thing you do is you go on TripAdvisor and you write 87, reviews against them. Bad place, crooks, they stole me, they left me dry, sakana. Huh? Stay away. Instead, he goes back to the same hotel. Where'd you get all this gold and silver from?
Whatever I took from here, I brought. He gave me remez. I know you stole it, but whatever you put in my trunk, that's what I brought. So, oh my God, we're sitting on Afar of Avraham Avinu over here. They didn't know. They took apart the hotel. The next day, they put a sign up, hotel closed forever. They brought in the demolition. They knocked down an 18-story hotel. And now all they're just digging, making buckets of this stuff. Digging. V'amtinu lebe malkah. So they tell the king, Amru le, hay afrad de aite acham medidan. Where do you think the home got his afar? From us. He got it from us. Anyway, they checked it. And didn't work. Dirt bombs. They're throwing dirt bombs. So they're throwing it at the enemy. The enemy goes like this. What is this? You're joking around? There's no another one at him. So they realize it's a hoax, and they killed the guy. That's the story of Naomi's Ginzo, Naomi's Gamzo. Because he always would say Gamzo the Tova. So I saw over here there's another story of another rabbi that has a similar episode, but it's not exactly. That's the Gemara Berachot with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had a similar story. His story was that he went on a trip again and he had his donkey and he had his lantern and he had his chicken, his rooster. And then when he got to the hotel, they told him, you know, we don't take Starwood over here. And they told him, you know, you can stay here, you can go somewhere else, no vacancy. Imagine that, what kind of guy at the front desk doesn't have a room for Rabbi Akiva? Okay. And the greatness of Rabbi Akiva, he didn't say, do you know who I am? He doesn't say he made a stink, doesn't say he went berserk on the guy, he didn't call up his travel agent. I'm here, I'm sitting at the hotel, I'm at the desk, the guy said there's no rooms over here, what's going on over here, I'm my kids, I'm the... Nothing, Rabbi Akiva doesn't lose his cool. And I'm sure some of our members, Baruch Hashem, would react in the same way. He said, call David Rahamana, the Tav Avid. Whatever Rahamana does, the Tav Avid, it's all good. And the students say, okay, Rabbi, now what? We'll have a camping trip. They go out to the field, they pitch a tent, and sure enough, in the middle of the night, a cat comes and eats the rooster. And all of a sudden, a lion comes and eats the donkey. And the wind comes and blows out their lantern. And every time it happens, Rabbi Akiva says, God, call David Ramana, letav avi. No hotel room, no equipment, no nothing. And he's saying, the Ben Ish Chai says, the ways of the Hachamim, they speak softly. Nahat, he says, Rashi Tevot, Ner, Hamor, Tanegol. Even though he lost the Ner, he lost the Hamor, he lost the Tanegol, he doesn't get angry or whatever happened. Sure enough, that night, robbers come into the hotel, they pillage the place, they burn the place down, they pillage the whole city. Next day, they get the newspaper from in front of the door, wherever he was staying, opens the thing, front page, disaster, the city pillaged. He says, you see, didn't I tell you, look what happened over here, the best thing that happened, if we were in that hotel, we would have, yes? Very interesting. The Gemara doesn't say that they nicknamed Rabbi Akiva, you know, Letav. And everybody has the same question. They said, Rabbi Akiva was a student of Naomi Gamzo. Yeah. He learned with him. So then, is it the same Midah? Is Nahum and Rabbi Akiva basically the same thing? It just says, he says it in Hebrew, he says it in Aramaic. Nahomish Gamzu's line is Gamzu Letova, and the Biakiva's line is what? So it's like the Unkilus on that. So everybody tries to, well, if he's a student of his, so it must be, it's the same thing. He learned it from his Rebbe. That's where he got it from. So they're not going to nickname him. They nicknamed the Rebbe already. They're going to nickname the student. He got it from his Gamzu is from this Gamzu. So they're going to nickname him Biakiva. We know the fountain that he got this water from. But the Baal Shem Tov over here says something incredible. He says, no, it's a different Madrega here, Rabotai. It's a different Madrega. Nahum being the rabbi is on a much higher Madrega than the Biakiva. And what's the difference? So there's two ways of reacting. One way that the Tzaddik reacts as the Baal Shem Tov is that he says, everything works out. You have to be patient. Borei Olam is always moving the wheels of Ashkaha in place, in motion. And therefore, you'll see. And then there's another level that's not, you'll see that it's good, but it's good now. This is a much higher level. Now it's good. What do you mean now it's good? Now it's bad. Now it's good. And the Baal Shem says that if you're on that level, that you understand that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is not good when it comes good only, but it's good even when it's happening, then already that zechut alone, you get to see the good. Now, it's not enough just to say it. You have to believe it. I told the story in one of the yeshivas recently, Rav David Kviat from the Mir Yeshiva, Alav Hashalom, Sukkot David, that he used to always, all day long, his finger was like this. You remember that? His finger was like this moving. And they say, because he used to always be spelling out the Yud Kei Vav Kei. And he wanted to fulfill Shiviti Hashem Benegdi Tamid, the God's always in front of me. So even when he's teaching in the Shiva, you see his finger like this on the paper. Always making you. So now I go to Shiva next week. I see one of the girls. Mm-hmm. Oh, he became Rav David Kviat in a week. He was 90 years old when he was doing that. Put your finger down. All of a sudden you're making Yud Kei Vav Keis, which means it's not just a copy. You're not a copycat. It's not the Purim, your costume. You have to have that midah inside. If it's inside of you, it happens to come out doing this, then no problem. But it doesn't start with this. So anyway, Nahum Ish Gamzu says the Baal Shem, he was on a higher level than the Biakiba. His madriga was that not you'll see. Biakiba said to the students, "Kol David Rahamana Letav Avid. It's for the best. We'll see how it works out." And sure enough, after it happened, what does the Biakiba say? I told you so. You see, the Biakiba has to wait until after he gets the answer to tell the students, I told you so. Because they only have that level of understanding that, be patient, you'll see it's good, you'll see. So then after it happened, he says, yeah, you see? Whereas Nahomish Gamzu doesn't have to wait. Nahomish Gamzu says, it's good now. Now already, it's good. We don't have to wait. It's a much higher madriga. When he sees the afar, when he gets to the king's house, according to that opinion, he doesn't say, all right, but that's a shame, it'll work out. He says, it's good. Even this situation, it's good. And all of a sudden, Yahweh Nabi shows up. Yeah, this is the afar of that. It's not the afar turned into gold. With the afar itself. Which means, if you ask, how could afar be good in this case? There's no way. Afar cannot be good. Eliyahu Nabi came and said, yeah. Not that he turned the afar into ballistic missiles. In the afar itself, it became the afar of Avraham Avinu that used... So Nahum is right. Even this is good. And if since he believed it, he was able to... through his emunah and such understanding. Also, based on this, by the way, just as a side point, I am going to read the parentheses. Once you say the Baal Shem Tov, the parentheses are fine. Because it says, in the hotel he opened it up. No problem. if you hold everything's good, so therefore there's no problem to say that he opened it up that night, he saw the afar, and he keeps on going. Why go home? Why go home? Obviously this is from God over here. This is from God. So this is from God. So therefore, we'll have to turn back. So the parentheses actually explains the higher level of Nahum. Now, it's not in Gemara Ta'anit, this text, but if you look in the text in Sanhedrin, where the story is also written, they have this version. So, there's a way to justify that parenthetical. So they refer to him, they say, Gams. So we always understand the word Gam. Gam means also. Gam is an inclusionary terminology. But I found here in one of the Sefarim, and I'll give you the Mekor, of course. The Mekor is in a Midrash in Megillat Esther. Bring me your Misilat Yesharim. We're learning Misilat Yesharim also in the yeshiva. Misilat Yesharim, Rav Moshe Chaim Lotzato, it's right at the end there. Rav Moshe Chaim Lotzato was not a Hasid, you know. As a matter of fact, in the introduction of his Misilat Yesharim, he rails against the Hasidim, with all due respect. He's, you know, he didn't like, you know, them reading Tehillim all day long and doing all sorts of, you know, tikkunim and different behaviors and singing songs. He was more from the, he was Sfaradi, of course, from the school of the Gaon Mevilna. That's why, you know, usually in Mesilat Yesharim, they always put the Igeret Agra together. In the books, everything's with Hashemayim. They put him with one of his, like people. Anyway, if you open up Perek Yutet in Mesilat Yesharim, chapter 19. Actually, this is called the Hasidut, the Book of Hasidut. It's a big chapter. Look what he writes over here. Chapter doesn't end this chapter. So it says like this. He's talking about how to accept, you know, Yisurin. You know, what's the method how to accept, you know, what God deals you? This is therapy here. He's saying, listen, one of the services of God is you have to reach a level called Ahava, love of God. The problem is, Yisurin has a danger of impeding that love, which means a son has a natural tendency to love his father. But if the father beats up the kid, that love now gets tested. If the father doesn't help the kid when he's hungry, so over the course of time, that love turns into resentment. So the Rab over here of Moshe Chaim is saying, you have to love God. But then there's Yisurin. And the Yisurin can have a negative effect by impacting that relationship. Because if I see God giving Yisurin, I'm angry. What are you doing to me? So he gives you two methods how to overcome that item that Yisurin will not affect your love that you have for God. Not a bad advice. So he writes, Ha'echad shaveh lechol nefesh. One is for the, you know, for everybody. V'shiniyah l'hachamim ba'aleh ha'de'ah ha'amukah. And the second advice is for, you know, high-level people. So right away, he's saying, I'm giving you two pieces of advice. One is for public consumption. And the second piece of advice, you know, you have to be holding. Ha'hat, kol mai da'avdin min shemaya letav. Train yourself to say, it'll all be good. V'zeh, ki afilu atza'ar v'hadoha kanir'e be'enav ra'a. Even though it seems to him at that moment bad, enenu be'emet, it's really not the way it looks. Ela toba amitit, uchmashal ha'rofe, ha'chotech et ha'basar o et ha'ever. And God forbid, you know, a leg that's gangrene. So the doctor comes along and cuts it off. Although it looks bad, but actually, in the long run, it's saving the patient's life. Shatapisha ma'aseh achzari lechaora. To go just chop him a leg. Enu el rahmanut. Letivo baharito. And adrabah. That patient, after the operation, loves the doctor more than he loved him before. Saved his life. So when you have that attitude and say, somehow this saved my life. So you say, I love you more, God. Adrabah, Yosif Ahaba, Ken Adavar, Keshi Yashov Ba'adam Shekol Mashkir Baruch Hu Oseh Imo, Letovato Oseh, Ben Shiyeh Begufo, Ben Shiyeh Bamono, Ava Pishu Enu Ro'eh, Ve'enu Mevin. He doesn't understand how. And then look, Tachrash Abato, say, okay, listen, Hashem knows what he's doing. That's the first method for the Shaveh Lechol Nefesh guys. Now he offers a second interpretation. Ach, Ba'ale HaDe'ah HaAmitit, what the real guys will know, Enam Sirichim Afilu L'Ta'am HaZeh, they don't need that. Ki hare en lehem kavanat atzmam klal. He says it. It's amazing. He says the real tzaddik, he's not thinking about himself. Ela kol tefilatam, their whole prayer in life is what? Lehagdil kevod shemo yitbarach. They're living to what? To sanctify God's name. They have no personal stuff. V'chol ma sheyitgaberu ekuvim negdam, the more ekuvim, the more they're able to show their loyalty to God under those circumstances. So to the real person, Adma Yisurin, to them is an opportunity. If you're interested in promoting God, it's a much bigger level that the people will see that, look, he's promoting God even under duress. Take it from one of them that could show that they trust, believe in God, even under such situations. Kesar sabar ashum b'gvura. A good general, he always chooses the biggest battles because he wants to show his strength. Larot tokfo. Uchvar murgal ze'anyam b'chol ohev basar v'adam shi'yismak yishdamenu mash yukha larot bo et asher. Which means, if I want to show how much I love you, I want to show you in the highest way. So when the tzaddik over here at this level gets yisurin, he embraces it. By Allah, now I can show you how much I love. Whose level is that? That's Nahomish Gamzu. That's Adam the tzaddik. It's good now because from this now I can show my loyalty to God. I don't got to wait. The first guy says, you'll see. The leg will cut off and I lived. That's going to happen. The first one is the level of Nahomish is Rabbi Akiva, and the second Nahomish guy. So this is Mishnah Yesharim already. You know, Yibal Sheva. They're both two schools, and they come to the basic the same result.
What chapter?
Chapter 19. Don't kid yourself. He's not going back to the book. Don't kid yourself.
It's the most amazing thing I ever heard.
Okay. Mr. Sharim, I'm just a waiter.
Theory that something bad that you think.
Yeah, now you want to show.
No,
right. Now you're saying, look, I'm a warrior. I'm going to show, even in this war, I'm going to show my loyalty to God. To me. A lady came to the ladies' class yesterday. After the class is over, she says, can I speak to the Rav for a minute? Of course, a minute turns into 10 minutes, but that's, I'm used to that already. So, by the way, she didn't say she starts to burst out crying. She lost her son. So when did you lose your son? 2 weeks ago. How old your son? 20 years old. What? You here? What are you doing here? How could you stand up? How do you stand up? It's amazing. It's an amazing thing. So that's the warriors. Under you have every excuse to go on the bed, put the covers over your head, and don't pray for a month. Don't do anything. I'm angry. I have to push myself to fight. So that's a warrior to a certain degree. You push yourself to go serve under the circumstances. Anyway, there's a midrash in Megillat Esther Rabbah, Perek Gimel. Gam Vashti Malka Aseta Meshte Nashim. Rabotai, Punim is around the corner. So it says over here that Gam Vashti Malka Vashti made a party. So the Midrash is coming along and saying that word Gam is extra. It should have said, Bashti Asetam, what does it mean, Gam Bashti? So it says in the Midrash, Gam Bashti Amalka. Gam Higiya Mashtuta. Mishte Nashim, Mishte, the word is coming from the word Mashtuta. In parentheses, the Midrash says, Akirata. That was a time to be uprooted. Higiya zmana shel Vashti ligamem. Ligamem means to be cut. Now that's a new word of the Midrash. Gam Vashti Abalka. That Vashti also now her time became to become what? To become gammed. Ligamem. To be cut. What's the matter, Amy? What's the matter? But you know, sitting here, you know, coming. Make a photo. What's a cafe after? So now,
changing of the God.
So now, explanations like this. Explanations like this. Remember when Hava ate from the tree? What does it say in the pasuk? We have the pasukim right over here. Page 1 over here in Bereshit. Borei Olam says, don't eat from the tree. Benahasha Ya'arum. Tera Isha ki tov ha'es lema'achal v'chi ta'abau le'inayim v'tikam e'periyo v'tochal v'titen gam le'isha. Ma ze gam le'isha? She'll say, v'titen le'isha. We know she ate already. You have to tell me gam de isha? Isha means ish shela, to her husband. Well, obviously, if she ate, and then she gave it to him, so ma ze hagam azot? You understand the question? So according to this Mishnah, so Haskuni has an interpretation. Haskuni deals with the gam, ayin sham, after you finish the Mishnah Yisharim. But according to this Mishnah, according to this Midrash, when she ate from the tree, she cut herself down. She wrote herself a death sentence. You know what she gave to Adam and Ishon when she gave him from the tree also? Vatiten gam la'isha. She gave Adam gam, meaning cut down. That's what she gave her husband. She basically killed him. Understand what's going on over here? You understand what's happening here in the Botai?
Yes.
So the word gam has different meanings. Gam could be an inclusive word, lerabot. And gam could mean to cut, like we saw in the Midrash over here. So based on this, the nickname that they called Nahum is actually a good name. What Nahum used to say, Gamzu Letova, that even the gam, even the cut, even the yisurin, even the death sentence, even the gamzu, that's already letova. So therefore, gamzu is not a arbitrary part of this saying. The gamzu is that's the ikar of it over there. Even the bad he was able to understand is as a goodness to it. Even the death or the troubles. So it could be, Rabotai, based on this. Look at Avraham Avinu. He's going to a war against the five kings. He didn't take weapons with him. You're going to a war. According to one opinion, he took 318 soldiers, which is not enough soldiers clearly to fight the five kings. And according to another opinion, he took one soldier, Eliezer. Where's the weapons? Avraham Avinu gets there and says, there's Afar over there. We'll figure it out. And sure enough, he gets over there. He picks up the Afar, and it turns into... That means whatever situation Avraham Avinu was in, no different than Nahum, by the way. Nahum's the same thing. He saw the Afar and he still went to the king. It's all good. He didn't have weapons. Where did he go weapons? There was no weapons deals in those days. Where are you going to go buy weapons? He went. This is why Hashem wants me to fight with Afar. Even though there's a death sentence on me, Gamzu, they're going to kill me. The Torah, I picked up the... So Nahum Ish Gamzu was a student of Avraham Avinu. What does it mean, a student of Avraham Avinu? You know what Rav Chaim Volozhin said? Chaim Volozhin said that if you look at the Mishnah Pirkei Avot, it says, Asara dorot me Adam ad Noah. Asara dorot me Noah ad Avraham Avinu. Which means, when the Mishnah of the Pirkei Avot is discussing the generations, it tells me there's 10 generations from Adam to Noah. And that's true. And then it says there's 10 generations from Noah to Avraham Avinu. So over there, I want to see the Lashon exactly in the Mishnah. We have Pirkei Avot here? I have it on my phone, actually. Is it? Not in this one. Bring me just the Siddur that has it right there. Here, bring it. Yeah, somehow. How is he doing that? You see, amazing Lashon. I don't want to compromise the. Here it is. Asara dorot. Here, it's in the fifth Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Asara Nishyonot Nitnasa Avraham Avinu. First Mishnah, when it's counting the generations, it says, Asara Dorot Minoah Ad Avraham. Period. In the second Mishnah, it says, Asara Nishyonot Nitnasa Avraham Avinu. So Chaim Volozhin asks, why in the first Mishnah you don't refer to him as Avinu? And in the second Mishnah, when you're talking about the Nisyonot, you refer to him as Avinu. The answer, he says, that the nature of a father is that he bequeaths to his children the genes. Your dominant genes are going to go into your children. When the Mishnah is discussing the test that Avraham Avinu passed, the Nisyonot, there the Mishnah says Avraham is Avinu. All his goodness goes down into the genes like a father. That means if Avraham passed the test, we better off because of that. Because Avraham, his test creates spiritual genes. And it's those genes that are passed into the father, by the father. Whereas, when you're counting the 10 generations from Abraham or to not Abraham, that's got nothing to do with fatherhood. That's just history. There was 10 generations, not Abraham. That doesn't pass. It's not passing anything down to us. It's just 10 generations. But his accomplishments, the nishyonot, make him Avinu. Understand?
Yeah.
So that means, if you ask me, where did Nahum Yishgamzu get this from? He got it from Avraham Avinu. So the first Ish Gamzu Letova was who? Avraham Avinu. Could be that's what it means in the Mishnah. If you want to be a student of Avraham, Ayin Tova. Ayin Tova means that whenever you look at something, it's Letova. That's the Ayin Tova of Avraham Avinu. Not only Ayin Tova is happy for the other guy, oh, that's the way we understood always. But Ayin Tova means that everything that he sees, Tova. But it's terrible. Terrible for you. Avraham is Tova. Avraham sees dirt. What does he say? Ishtabach Shemo. You mean tomorrow? Not tomorrow. Today, Ishtabach Shemo. Tova now. Pick up the dirt, throw it on the guy's head. So therefore, Nahum Ish Gamzu, he's a Talmid Shel Avraham Avinu. He had that Ayin Tova. You know, in America, they say, and I'll conclude this, we have to go to the seminary. In America, they say, you know, when somebody wants to show that he's optimistic, he says, I'm a guy that the glass is half full. I'm not a guy that the glass is half empty. Now, is that a Torah concept? No. According to the Torah concept, the guy's got to say, I'm a guy that says the whole cup is full. Even the empty part is good. That's the highest madriga. Because the way the American saying goes is, the cup is half full. That means basically you're saying, and the empty part, kapara. That's where the Nahum comes in. On the empty part, he says, guess what, you tipesh. That's also good. The cup is not half empty, the cup is totally full. How can it be totally full? It's missing. The gamzu letova, that's also good. I don't need you to come along and tell me that the half part is half part. That I see, my hadush is on the empty part that you say is good. So therefore we see the great midah of Avraham Avinu. And if Avraham Avinu had that midah, gentlemen, that means we're able to have that, or get to...
We're able
to strive at least, to strive over the course of time, to get to this, and that's Mesilat Yesharim's idea, that when one is living like that, on the contrary, the challenges of life only cause him to love God even more, because he's able to show through the thick how much he's devoted. All right, gentlemen, we'll stop.